Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Marion Franklin, a GB canoe slalom athlete.
Yeah, I'm Joe Clark. I am the Olympic champion from Rio 2016.
I'm Joe Fraser, Team GB gymnast.
Hey, my name's Emma Wilson. I'm a windsurfer. I'm really happy to be selected for Team GB for Paris 2024.
This is Anything But Footy, the Olympic and Paralympic podcast, covering the games all the time rather than once every 4 years. I'm Michael.
And I'm John, and we're on a route to Paris along with the Olympic Flame, which sets sail across the Med this weekend.
We are really pursuing that en route to Paris, aren't we? Coming up, we will hear from the president of the Paris 2024 organising committee as they get their hands on that flame. Not literally, hopefully.
And we'll also run through some of the extra details we know about the opening ceremony on the River Seine.
Right, let's start with these two words. Two words I thought I might never say on this podcast, but artificial intelligence. Certainly not talking about you or me. But when it's about the Olympic Games, it is slightly different. It is something we want to talk about on the podcast. Now, John has been speaking to a couple of legendary champions about how the Olympics aims to be the leader of change in a positive way.
If you're looking at, you know, harassment online, you know, that's something that was big for me in my career, especially leading up to the 2018 Olympics.
Gymnastics is too complex, but I think they will help them identify faster some base things.
Yeah, stand by for that. It's also 3 months to go till Paris 2024 and the sport gets underway. Michael has caught up with Team GB's Adam Burgess from the canoe slalom team as they start their season. We've also got sailing, gymnastics, tennis, paratable tennis, athletics in our usual news from the games.
We'd love to hear from you. Do stay in touch. We are about any time across all the social media platforms. Just give Anything But Footy a search there. You can also find us on our website, anythingbutfooty.com. I'm aware that we've been promising a blog for a while. It drops Monday. So, 3 months to go and so much to do before Paris 2024. We'll hear the latest on the Olympic Flame and its journey to France in a moment. But first, John has been at the Olympic Park in London, Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park in London, meeting some Olympic champions and talking to the IOC for TalkSport.
So yeah, the president of the International Olympic Committee, Thomas Bach, was speaking at the launch of the Olympic AI agenda in Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park, the home of the London Games 12 years ago. I did manage to speak to him for Talk Sport, but also what was really interesting is that he said that the Olympics needs to be the leader of change. He admitted there were opportunities and risks with AI, but the athletes were always at the centre of the Olympic movement, and AI will never replace the athlete. It could look at some of the things around it. We talked about data, recording images, videos from far aflung places in the world. They get sent back to analysts, and people can then work out, well, that person could be a long jumper, this person could be a rower. They talked about the design, the AI design of bikes and shoes and other equipment, of course, that Olympians knew. And also training purposes. What really came out was a robot had been trained to play like the Chinese table tennis champion, and he could play himself in practice, or actually opposition people could try and get up to his standard. So I think there were lots of opportunities there. We also heard that AI was leading the way in safeguarding and trying to prevent online abuse. And that was a subject that was very much at the heart of downhill skier and Olympic champion Lindsey Vonn, who won gold in the 2010 Winter Olympics for Team USA. And I managed to grab a word with her afterwards.
Everything can be used in a positive or negative way. It's all about how it's applied. And I think they've done a great job to safeguard as many of the aspects of AI as possible, and really using ethics and psychology and many components that I think could be potentially overlooked if you're not careful. But I think most of the things that they're using AI for in the Olympic movement are incredibly positive and beneficial. If you're looking at, you know, harassment online, you know, that's something that was big for me in my career, especially leading up to the 2018 Olympics, and the fact that the Olympians now won't have to deal with that, that they can in real time detect, address, and actually prosecute people that are trying to inflict harm on them. You know, that is a huge deal, and that is very, very positive. And it's something that, you know, as personally, I've tried to invest in companies that are trying to do just that, but it's very difficult to get a company to be able to apply that on a large scale. So the fact that they're able to do that using AI, I think, is incredible.
And I think you said that would be happening in Paris at this summer's Olympics.
Yeah, they're using it in Paris. I'd have to ask specifically who is able to use it. But I think it's all of the athletes and also coaches and governing bodies.
Final question. How are you? You're sitting here with your leg up in the air. Now, how are you? And you're not a retired athlete. I don't think anything... I always say athletes shouldn't retire because they're so young. They just step away. How is life stepping away?
I'd like to say it's my next chapter. You know, the book is still being written. It was a great first chapter. I loved it. Loved every second of it. But, this surgery that I just had was a partial knee replacement, and I'm trying to build a life for myself beyond skiing. I'd love to ski with my kids one day. You know, I'd love to play tennis for a long time. You know, all the things I love to do, I want to keep doing them. And that's kind of what the surgery was about for me. You know, it became an impossible task to try to maintain some resemblance of a normal body and a normal life. And I prefer not to be in pain all the time. So this is a good start. I actually can straighten my leg, which is the first time in like 6 years. So, so far, so good.
We wish you well. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
Lindsey Vonn, the downhill skiing Olympic champion from 2010. I also had the honor of meeting Nadia Comaneci, the gymnast, the first perfect 10, of course, in 1976 in Montreal. And what I wanted to talk to her about, apart from the obvious, was could judges be replaced by AI?
Usually I don't like to talk too much about myself, but, the history that happened many years ago, it's almost like a half of a decade, and people still relate to that. And it's always coming up, you know, everything that's happening at the Olympics, and we look into the future, we always have to remember the past and where everything started and each sport with what legend, and, you put stone by stone to be able to create something in every sport.
You were a game changer. You changed your sport forever.
Yes, I didn't know, though.
We're here today to talk about AI. Mm-hmm. It's a game changer too, isn't it?
Yeah, it will be, for the athletes, for a lot of the things that will, AI will help their preparation. There was very complex to see now that they can detect what's your sport and what you will be good at. And I think in this way it will help a lot an athlete, because they will know which part you have to work at. Are you really weaker on the right leg? I mean, all of the things that we didn't have when I was competing. So we had to figure out everything on our own.
One of the things they talked about was judging. And yes. How it could help judges.
I think they can help the judging by explaining also to the fans a couple of things that are very important in gymnastics, but starting with the base. The area landing has three lines. You have to land on a middle line. If your shoulders are too low, the angle of the shoulders too close to the ground, that's like what kind of deduction it is. This is a 10, this is a 3-10, this is a half a point. So those kind of basic things, and on some events to calculate, was that a handstand or was not a handstand? So that will help the judging be a little faster, but they will not be able to eliminate all the human part.
I was going to ask that. Could they get rid of judging?
No, they can't. No. Because gymnastics is too complex, but I think they will help them identify faster some base things, and the AI is going to work with every federation to be able that they build all this AI information from the base.
Nadia Komenech and Michael, she said there that AI won't replace judges, it'll help judges. But I think it could get to that point, couldn't it? Because if they can pick something within 10 seconds or even 10 hundredths of a second, then why do you then need a human eye to look at it?
Let's learn some lessons from football, shall we? And VAR. And, you know, I was having the conversation. I used to work at Coventry City Football Club. So, you know, I've got a big soft spot for Coventry City. Mm. And I really thought they'd got back to their first FA Cup final since 1987. And actually, the year that I worked there, I tracked down all that team from 1987 and interviewed them all and spent time with them all and got to know them all a bit. So I was heartbroken for Coventry City. And then afterwards, I was thinking, this is our own fault because we were the people that criticised referees and assistant referees' performances to the nth degree. And I was listening to some of the TV pundits moaning about how VAR had robbed the FA Cup of one of the biggest fairy tales in its history. And I'm thinking to myself, it's robbed it because you used to sit before, during and after the match and analyse every refereeing, every assistant refereeing decision. And you would draw the lines on the screen and you would draw the circles and you'd draw the little arrows. So we got to the point where we then brought in the technology. And as I understood it, the technology was there to get rid of clear and obvious errors. Mm. And the Coventry winning goal, and I know we're a podcast called Anything But Footy, but I think there's real parallels to be drawn between what happened in the football and what you've been talking to these Olympic legends about. There wasn't a clear and obvious error to me, and the fact that it took them 5, 6, 7 minutes to try and arguably get the right result in the end meant that it wasn't a clear and obvious error. Football is always going to have been a game about mistakes, isn't it? Mm. Everything in football is because someone's made a mistake, whether that's a misplaced pass, whether that's a foul, a goalkeeper fumbling, someone hitting the crossbar when they've got an open goal. It's a game of mistakes, and referees and assistant referees weren't impervious to them. And that's part of the joy of sport. And that's what I think. And we do have a lot of judge sports in the Olympic Games, and we're going to have more judge sports in the Olympic Games because, you know, things like breaking is going to be a judge sport, yeah. Like diving is, and like gymnastics is,
BMX,
like boxing
freestyle.
Is. BMX freestyle. A lot of these modern urban sports, you know, take judges and judging into consideration. And the judges are not going to get it right 100% of the time. But then when we start bringing the robots in to do the job, they're probably not going to get it right 100% of the time because they're only as good as the people that have programmed them.
And they could be hacked.
Oh, let's not go down that route.
No, but it's
systematic state hacking is the next thing. Oh, we're going to have the World Anti-Doping Authority, WADA, who've been pretty busy, as we know, dealing with Chinese swimmers this week. And then we're going to have the World Anti-Hacking Authority, WAHA. I mean, where does it stop? I mean, jobs for everyone here.
Look, I agree with what Thomas Buck wants to do, which is, look, with the Olympics, we want to lead and we want to be on top of AI. But so many questions, and they're just a couple that we've just come up with in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, and the other thing, as we've said time and time again on this podcast, that the IOC don't move quickly, so I wouldn't worry too much. AI is moving quickly, though, and, you know, credit, I think, to the IOC for at least addressing the situation and being on top of it. It's not going to happen for Paris because we are 3 months to go. We are en route to Paris, as is the Olympic flame, as we've mentioned. Now, our friend Phil Barker, Olympic historian, was with us in the last episode of Anything But Footy as the flame was lit. And then the 11-day torch relay began around Greece. Terrific reportage there from Phil. And now the Paris 2024 organisers are getting their hands on the flame, and they are about to start their official 2024 torch relay around France. Now, the flame will, before that, travel for 12 days across the Med from Greece and then arrive in Marseille on a historic three-masted sailing ship, the Belem, it's called. It will arrive in Marseille on the 8th of May, and it will be welcomed with a maritime parade into the Old Port. And Tony Estanguet, the president of the Paris 2024 Organising Committee, so if you like, Paris's SEBCO, says that he can't wait for this next chapter in the build-up to the Olympics.
Definitely the Belem will be the next moment for us to celebrate the comeback of the Games, one centenary after the last edition of the Summer Games. So Belem will play a very symbolic moment to bring back the flame to our country and to arrive in Marseille, a very important city of sport also in our country, and start the journey of this Olympic torch relay. It's a unique moment, and again, it's once every centenary that France will host the Summer Games. So we should really enjoy this kind of unique moment, and it's what I do, definitely.
Tony Aston-Gay talking there, of course, ahead of what is going to be an incredible summer. And that Olympic torch, after it's been all the way through France, you'll remember it when it was in London, when it went from Land's End to John O'Groats and everywhere in between, before David Beckham brought it in on the boat, that it will arrive for the opening ceremony. And we've had a bit more briefing on what we can expect, with the organisers, Michael, saying they want to plan to turn the city into a giant open-air stadium. And the athletes' parade will start at the start of the ceremony as well. So from 6:40 UK time, Friday, July 26th, and the whole thing should finish by 10:15. Although, of course, they said that about London, and we were still going strong around midnight from memories. But look, that's the plan. And I think it's quite interesting that they are trying to bring the athletes' parade and weave it into the narrative, rather than just, here's the storytelling bit, here's the parade, here are the speeches, let's all go home. What's interesting is they've said that some teams will share boats, because obviously some teams are very small, some teams are a lot larger. So that will be interesting to see how that works. And they will sail from east to west along the Seine and end up at the Trocadero. Now, this is what the bit I didn't get previously from this briefing. What they will arrive at the Trocadero, which faces the Eiffel Tower, and all the athletes will get off the boats, which sounds like a logistical nightmare to me, trying to get people on and off. But we'll see. They've got experience with the bateaux, of course, that go up and down the Seine. And then they'll gather for the opening. And that's where the speeches will be. And there'll be lots of the usual things that we always see, the flag being raised and the flame arriving, etc. A couple of other things they did say, they're going to use some of the iconic monuments and structures around Paris, but that will just be for TV audience. So you might see a little bit of it if you're in Paris, but from a TV point of view, it will also be a spectacle, and they want to put on a unique show for the world. And as ever, there is no contingency for rain. So the show will go on, come what may. It is going to be spectacular. It's going to be a logistical nightmare. It's going to be a security nightmare. But I tell you, if Paris pulls this off, and Thomas Bach and Christophe Dubé, who we talked about earlier in the podcast, they told me on TalkSport last week, look, you don't compare Olympic Games. You don't compare London with Paris, because they're totally different. But it is going to be one spectacular opening ceremony. And you, of course, Michael, are the guru on that.
I'm actually really looking forward to seeing how many athletes, we used to say march, didn't we, but this time sail in the athletes' parade, because we know that opening ceremonies aren't particularly designed. They're designed for the TV audience, as you just said. They're not particularly designed from an athlete's point of view. Athletes have to leave the village very early, so they'll be leaving kind of after lunchtime. They get herded into these kind of holding venues, these big warehouses, if they're lucky, where they then have to sit, or an adjoining arena, if such a thing exists. They then have to sit and wait. Then obviously they do get their opportunity to march in traditional times. And that, we know, is not a quick process with 200 nations and territories and everyone else, including a refugee team, for example. Mm. You know, there's going to be, I think, around about 205 delegations in Paris. So again, that's not a quick process. And then they have to kind of sit it out, if you like, because you can't really skulk off at that point, can you? I know some do, and some have arrangements, and they can get out of the stadium. And interestingly, in Birmingham at the Commonwealth Games, I was in a brilliant position to see the particular part of the stadium where the athletes who came in marched round and then were able to leg it to the closest taxi. I think it's going to be harder for the athletes here. Mm. And I just wonder what kind of impact that might have on what they're there to do, if you like, which is that they're there to perform, aren't they? And I just wonder what kind of impact, and some athletes, I think, might end up making the decision, do you know what, it's not worth it. We are, I'm going to say, going to hear from Team GB athlete Adam Burgess in a moment. And I asked him about the opening ceremony, and we'll reflect on it when we hear the interview in full. But he said he thinks it can be a performance advantage, because he feels that going to something like that, being part of it, experiencing it, is something that will then make him realize, whoa, I'm at the big deal here. I'm at the big games. It was in the Tokyo Games where there was no crowds at the opening ceremony. He feels that opening ceremony could be something that lifts him, but we'll talk more about Adam in a moment. Yeah, I just have some concerns for the athletes. And as we said in I think one of the previous editions relatively recently, you know, everyone's making money out of the Olympic Games, but arguably we're all making money because of the athletes, aren't we? It's them that we've come to see. So yeah, that would be my view on it, having sat through that presentation. Now I'm excited for it. I think it will be a great TV show if they pull it off. France and Paris is going to look amazing. But I think a few athletes might look at it and go, do you know what? Not for us. So 3 months to go then till that opening ceremony, Friday, the 26th of July. This is Anything But Footy, the Olympic and Paralympic podcast. And as I've mentioned, we'll hear from a Team GB athlete preparing for Paris next.
This is Anything But Footy. We're en route to Paris and spring is here. Well, I'm not really sure it is. I'm actually still wearing gloves at the moment when I go outside. It's that cold, but I bet it has
Turn
been
the
cold.
Heating
on. I can't do that outside, can I? Now, it has been cold at the Lee Valley White Water Centre in recent weeks, the home of the canoe slalom team for Paddle UK, the new name for British canoeing, of course. And the new slalom season is starting with the European Championships in the next couple of weeks in the middle of May. Now, we know, or you will know if you listen to Anything But Footy as well, that this team was one of the first to be confirmed for the Olympics by Team GB. Joe Clark, Mallory Franklin, Kimberly Woods and Adam Burgess. But there is still one place left in the men's kayak cross event. And the championships in Slovenia are also a chance to see how our British team are getting on ahead of Paris 2024. We're also going to find out right now because Michael has been catching up with Olympic Tokyo finalist Adam Burgess.
So the European Championships this year, it's really the first test, the first time that everyone who will be competing, well, almost everyone that will be competing at the Games will be on the start line together. So yeah, really looking forward really to seeing where I'm at and using this as an opportunity to practice what we've been working on in training.
How tough is it to spend all the winter and a significant part of the spring just in that sort of training bubble, if you like?
It's really difficult to sort of know where you're at when you're not racing, but also it is the main time to get the work done during the winter, during the spring. So yeah, this for me is the most exciting time of year when we're just coming out of that heavy training period into racing and you get to kind of enjoy the fruits of the labor.
Last time we spoke was the day you were formally named and announced by Team GB that you were going to the Olympics. You had a big plaster, big strapping on your arm at that point. I can't see it now, but for people listening, describe what you'd done and where you are now with that injury.
Yeah, so last time we spoke, I was in a cast. I just had surgery on my little finger that I'd broken in training. So I actually lost sort of 6-7 weeks from kind of mid-November. There was a bit of anxiety around that, around coming back and, you know, am I going to be at the level I was at? I had a week in Paris, early January, and then I spent 6 weeks in Australia. And yeah, pretty much by like not even the halfway point in Australia, the injury was like a distant memory. Had a couple of start lines, raced really well in Oz, won a couple of medals. And yeah, from that point, we never really look back. It's like, cool, yeah, that injury has been put to bed. And if anything, the time off was probably a positive thing. I'll certainly be taking a longer break in future, like end of season, because I think it was actually, time well spent.
And you mentioned a week in Paris. Was that a bit of R&R or were you also having a little look around and preparing and planning for the Olympic Games?
No, so yeah, the start of the year, with a week in Paris, that was that's kind of my first official training week back after my injury. I had to earn my warm weather camp. It was -4 all week in Paris before flying out to Oz. So I felt like, I think because I'd missed paddling so much in my time off, that I managed to get through it.
I'm interested in training for a specific event, whether that is the European Championships that's upcoming, whether that's the Olympics. In terms of that slalom course at Lee Valley. Are you able to adapt that to match the conditions that you're then going to compete in when you get to the competition?
It is possible to make changes, given like how the course is artificial. We can move the blocks around. There's always a bit of negotiation to have with the Whitewater Centre themselves and their rafting setup. So obviously they want the course set up in a certain way for whitewater rafting. We want it set up in a certain way for slalom. So yeah, there's a bit of give and take here and there. It's difficult to make kind of drastic changes, but there's a couple of tweaks that we've made more towards the Paris course than anywhere else. Yeah.
And then when do you get the opportunity to really do your recce, if you like, on the course that you're going to be competing on in Paris?
We've spent quite a long time training on the course in Paris already. I don't know the exact numbers, but, you know, sort of probably pushing 100 days over the last couple of years. So, yeah, it's starting to feel quite familiar already. We've had 3 training camps there just this year. And then next time back will be a longer camp, end of June into July, and then home for a little bit and then back out for the real thing.
And does everybody get that much time on the water in Paris? Or is it the fact that you are backed so well by Paddle UK and by the National Lottery and Team GB and UK Sport?
Yeah, so the fact that we're supported by UK Sport, National Lottery, does mean that we can travel to these training camps. But it's a necessity because everyone's doing it as well. I don't think it's an advantage that we're able to train there. We're just keeping up with everyone else. Yeah, for sure.
So European Championships obviously upcoming. We're going to see you in that. What does the calendar look like then between European Championships concluding and getting to the Games in Paris?
Yeah, so it's a fairly busy start to the season. And I guess, you know, we had to decide on whether we would commit to all the start lines. So following the European Championships, we've got the first half of our World Cup circuit. So we've got 3 World Cups throughout the month of June. And that pretty much takes us up to the end of June, where then it's the real thing for the Games all starts out. So yeah, for me personally, I've decided that all 4 start lines will be a good idea. I'm not peaking yet. I'm far from peaking. I will be in the summer. But these start lines, just they are the best experience you can get. That is the best training for the Olympic Games. So whether we're arriving there peaking or not, I think that's the best place for me to be. You just can't simulate that feeling of seeing on a start line with a crowd, commentary, you know, proper racing poles and numbers, everything out. So that's what we're going for.
And in terms of obviously practice and preparation, I'm pretty confident you know what you're doing as far as the slalom canoeing is concerned. But you're in Tokyo. It was a very different experience, as we know, because of COVID. Are you prepared and being prepared for the fact that Paris will be totally different in terms of that attention you might have and the fact that it will be absolutely packed supporting you guys and the other paddlers, of course?
Yeah, absolutely. Similar to Tokyo, I received some really good advice around that, you know, everything that just is the Olympic Games is just this like nonsense circus that's there to distract you from what we do every single day and we're so used to. I'm really fortunate, you know, the schedule that I have, I'm straight in off the bat after the opening ceremony. So I feel like that makes it quite easy to just hone in on what I need to do. It's easy to ignore all this other stuff because, you know, that can wait. It is exciting to be there, but that can all wait. Got plenty of time after I'm done racing. In terms of the crowd, yeah, I mean, just really excited, to be honest, to race in front of so many people. I love racing for a crowd. I love the energy that it gives me. And this will be the biggest crowd that I've raced in front of. I have done some practice. We had a race here recently in Lee Valley where I raced with crowd noise, like blasting in headphones. We've done a bit of work to prep for it, but it's not something that like I'm fazed by. If anything, I think it's a really positive thing.
You mentioned the opening ceremony. I'm interested in that. Have you looked at what the plans are? Have you seen some of the images? Have you thought about whether you might want to take part with these barges going down the River Seine?
Yeah, I think it looks amazing. It looks really exciting. I'm hoping to be a part of it. And yeah, I've heard news from France that they might have to change plans. I don't know if that's because of the Seine's too dirty or if it's like high water levels or if it was security, what it is. But yeah, I mean, to be involved in Olympic opening ceremony in any capacity, I think will be a really exciting thing. And I'm hoping to be involved because I think the energy that it would give me, you know, to go to the and go to Olympic Games is just so special. And I think that we want to embrace that side of it and use that energy to fuel the performance. I think you can go in and, you know, potentially be a bit overly serious and maybe make decisions that you wouldn't normally make. I think, you know, we want to go there and be relaxed and soak it all up and, yeah, enjoy the whole thing.
Well, it's great to catch up. Glad that your little finger has healed. And all the very best when you get to those European Championships in Slovenia.
Thank you very much.
Really interesting there to chat to Olympic finalist from Tokyo, Adam Burgess. Hearing about his preparations, how he wants to take part, not just in those European Championships, but in those World Cup events. As I think I put it to him, interesting as well to hear his thoughts on that opening ceremony that we discussed earlier as well. And, you know, last time we saw him, he had this huge sort of contraption on his arm, which he then said to me in that interview, it was just a broken little finger. And actually, if you go back to when that team was announced, and it was announced exclusively on Talk Sport, as you remember, and, you know, we went to see the guys on the day, he was very much playing it down, wasn't he? He was like, it's nothing to worry about, it's not a concern. But actually, when you listen to that interview, it was a little bit more concerning for him at the time than perhaps he liked to let on. The good news is, though, with Adam is he's fully fit, raring to go, and, you know, we'll be very interested to see how that team gets on in those European Championships in Slovenia.
What I love about athletes, Michael, is they always tell you that everything's fine, and then when it is fine, they can go back and go, well, actually, no, I was really worried. But, you know, it's good to hear that he's okay.
Yeah, let's round up some of the other news from the Games. En route to Paris, 3 months away, and we want to know the form of some of our big Team GB hopefuls, but we'll start with some injury news, and I don't think Jasmine Sawyers is playing this one down. She has ruptured her Achilles on her takeoff leg, an emotional video that she's released on her own Instagram. And Jasmine Sawyers, European indoor long jump champion who didn't compete in the indoor season this year, choosing to focus her entire 2024 around the Olympic Games. She was a finalist, you'll recall, in Rio. Really thought that this would be her time. She thought she would make the step up. She was in Tokyo as well, as we know. She really thought she could make the step up and get on the podium at these Games. But Jasmine Sawyers will not be there because of that injury. So we wish her well with her recovery. Her focus now, I guess, has to turn to Beijing and the next World Athletics Championships and whether she can get on that global podium there. And equally worryingly, Max Whitlock has pulled out of the Men's European Gymnastics Championships in Italy. This one is because of a wrist injury, which is not good, bearing in mind what Max does. The good news is, and why perhaps we don't need to worry quite so much, is we are told at the moment it's a precaution, and he's carrying on his prep for what would be his fourth and last Olympics. Commonwealth champion Jake Jarman, by the way, finished fourth in the men's all-round competition.
Yeah, we wish both Max all the best and Jasmine, as Michael said. Now, British Sailing have made it an incredible 14 out of 14 sailors qualified for the Paris 2024 Olympic Games. Connor Bainbridge delivered in the so-called Last Chance Regatta. It's a nice name for a competition, isn't it? In the kite surfing to book his place. British Sailing are the greatest sailing nation, of course, in Olympic history, and we've done plenty of podcasts with them in the last 6 months or so. You can listen back and hear how they're looking forward to Marseille, where the sailing is taking place.
Now, it's not officially official until Paralympics GB tell us that it's official. But huge congratulations.
It's true. That is true.
To Bai Tuomi, who's revealed on Insta in the week that she has done enough to qualify for Paris 2024. It's not official because Paralympics GB haven't told us it's official, but Bly's told us that it's happening. The British para table tennis star competes in the women class 7. Big boost as well for the British wheelchair tennis scene with the news the LTA are moving the annual British Open from Nottingham in August to the first week of Wimbledon on the grass at Roehampton in southwest London. It's hoped that this event will then attract more of the world's best players in the build-up to the Wheelchair Grand Slam at Wimbledon the following week in July.
And he's going to be one of the biggest names in Paris this summer. Not Michael, or LeBron James, but Noah Lyles. He will warm up at the London Diamond League meeting in the London Stadium just a few days before the games begin. Yes, the world champion will compete in the 100 metres on Saturday, July 20th. And Mondu Duplantis got the 2024 Diamond League season off to a stunning start in China as well, when he pushed his own world pole vault record to a new high of 6 meters 24. When does it not become news that Duplantis has extended his world pole vault world record? Quite an incredible athlete. Looking forward to seeing him in Paris.
And that London Diamond League meeting, I mean, I knew obviously it was going to be one of, or if not the final chance to see some of those big names before they go to Paris, but it's literally the day before I travel.
Yes.
To the Olympic Games. It's in London on Saturday, July the 20th. I'm off to the Olympics for the prep camp and Team GB the following day, or the day after the following day. And then the following Friday, the games begin with the opening ceremony. So, you know, if you want to go and see some of those people that will be winning medals at the Olympics, that Diamond League meeting, the London Diamond League meeting, is going to be a hot ticket. I would definitely recommend it as well. This is Anything But Footy. You can find us across all the social media platforms. We'd love to hear your views there. You can also read our latest blogs. We've got one coming soon. All the details to be revealed very shortly. You can check out what remains of 2024 and our sporting calendar as well, all on our website, anythingbutfooty.com. And stay with us. We're en route to Paris 2024 and the Olympic and the Paralympic Games.
Sports Social Podcast Network.